You're listening to Policy Currents, a weekly podcast from RAND. I'm Deanna Lee.
And I'm Evan Banks. Every Friday, we bring you new insights from RAND's latest research and commentary. It's June 7th.
The Biden administration recently authorized Ukraine to use U.S. weapons for limited strikes inside Russian territory. Some in Ukraine argue that this will derail Moscow's offensive in the Kharkiv region or even turn the tide of the war. Russian officials, on the other hand, call the move a major escalation and have threatened to retaliate directly against the United States or its allies. Both of these claims will likely prove hollow, says RAND's Samuel Cherup and Jeremy Shapiro of the European Council on Foreign Relations. While strikes inside Russia using U.S. weapons might slow military operations around Kharkiv, they will not be a game changer, they say. And past evidence suggests Russia is not going to dramatically escalate just because the United States provides a new weapon system or eases constraints on an existing one. But the U.S. authorization is consequential for a different reason, according to Cherup and Shapiro. Quote, Washington has yet again made a major policy change reactively, in response to Russia's military moves, and not as a part of a broader strategy. Adaptation and adjustment do not constitute strategy, and reactive escalation absent a strategy is not sound policy. The current U.S. approach continues a spiral dynamic that raises the risks of a broader war without establishing a path to ending the current conflict. This spiral of unrelenting Russian aggression and ever-increasing Western military support might go on for years to come. That is, until Ukraine and the West are ready to negotiate with Russia. As of right now, Ukraine and the West show no signs of being ready to start bargaining with Russia. This means that Ukraine will continue to suffer, and the cost of the war to the West will continue to mount. Or, perhaps even worse, one side or the other might finally stumble over an actual red line, which could lead to exactly the major escalation that the U.S. has been trying to avoid.
LGBTQ+ veterans have unique needs and challenges when it comes to accessing timely and appropriate health care. In fact, a RAND study published this week finds that when compared with their cisgender and heterosexual peers, both female and male sexual minority veterans, as well as transgender veterans, have poorer health-related outcomes. Here are some of the other findings from our study. Those who identify as bisexual or another non-heterosexual identity were significantly more likely to report having been unable to afford medical care in the past year than heterosexual veterans of the same sex. Male and female sexual minority veterans had higher odds of reporting a lifetime history of major depressive disorder when compared with their heterosexual peers. Lesbian or gay female veterans, gay male veterans, bisexual male veterans, and transgender veterans were more likely to have a lifetime diabetes diagnosis than their heterosexual or cisgender veteran peers were. And living in a state with a more favorable LGBTQ+ policy climate was associated with better health-related outcomes. The authors identify recommendations that could help support the health and well-being of LGBTQ+ veterans. For instance, it's important to ensure that these veterans receive the full benefits for which they are eligible. Actions are also needed to raise awareness for LGBTQ+ veterans regarding the Department of Defense's process to upgrade less than honorable discharges that were issued under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And finally, continued expansion of LGBTQ+ affirming services within the Veterans Health Administration could also help.
China's aggression against the Philippines in the South China Sea has been relentless. Beijing's tactics have included ramming, shadowing, blocking, encircling, firing water cannons, and using military-grade lasers against civilian ships and military vessels. Further, China relies on its formidable Coast Guard and so-called fishing militia. That's fishermen who are trained and equipped by the military to patrol, loiter in, and occupy disputed areas of the region. According to Rand's Derek Grossman, quote, China has the Philippines in an ever-tightening stranglehold that is increasingly compromising the latter's sovereignty and territorial integrity at sea. The result? The odds of armed conflict in the South China Sea are high and rising. What, if anything, can the Philippines and the United States do about it? Grossman recently laid out the options. One is to revise the current U.S.-Philippines treaty. Rather than vaguely highlighting an armed attack as the prompt for U.S. military intervention, Manila and Washington could broadly note that gray zone activities, like the ones Beijing has been employing lately, could or would count as armed attacks. Another option is for the U.S. military to play a more direct role in the region. For instance, some have argued for varying levels of U.S. involvement in the region without establishing a military base, such as combined naval or Coast Guard patrols. Washington could also stay the course. This would mean continuing to bolster the alliance through expansion of the existing defense cooperation agreement, more focused annual military exercises, and other engagements, as well as helping Manila to build its own military capabilities and expose China's bad behavior to the world. The best option, Grossman says, may be for the U.S. and the Philippines to stay the course, but to add new elements to their approach, such as imposing costs for China's aggression. This could give the Philippines the breathing room that it needs to modernize and professionalize its military with U.S. assistance, helping to reestablish deterrence and lessen the risk of war in the years to come.
To protect vulnerable renters from unsafe heat, Los Angeles County is considering establishing a safe maximum indoor temperature threshold for rental units. Although the details have not been finalized, the current proposal gives little in the way of guidance or support for how landlords should go about keeping units cool. According to Hyman Park of the Party Rand Graduate School and Rand's Flannery Dolan, this means that most landlords will likely end up doing what's quick, easy, and not particularly costly. They will buy an air conditioning unit. AC units use more energy than almost any other cooling system during extremely hot days. This is because when outdoor temperatures are very high, AC units must run for longer periods to keep the space cool. At unprecedented high air temperatures, the probability of every AC unit in the region getting turned on approaches 100%. This in turn causes a surge in energy demand, one that can exceed the capacity of LA County's current infrastructure. And to make matters worse, the heat emitted from running AC units actually intensifies urban heat island effects. This in turn increases cooling demand. It's a vicious cycle, a heat-driven, energy-sucking feedback loop. Instead of picking a single temperature limit as a one-size-fits-all approach, policymakers should prioritize protecting high-risk locations and populations. A safe temperature would look very different across different groups of people. Older people, infants, and those with certain chronic health conditions are at particular risk. The same is true for different types of buildings, which handle hot days quite differently. What's more, as climate change intensifies, more frequent, severe, and prolonged heat waves are to be expected. Considering all of these factors, passive cooling strategies such as cool roofs, shades, and better insulated windows may be a better option. All of these solutions can be very effective in cooling indoor spaces without also increasing energy demand. And implementing these resilient and sustainable cooling strategies would lessen the overall strain on the power grid when power is needed most, like during periods of extreme heat.
That's it for this week's episode. If you'd like to learn more about what we discussed today, check out the show notes at rand.org/podcast. We'll see you next week. RAND is a nonprofit institution that helps improve policy and decision-making through research and analysis.